Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
He knows, I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Okay. Hello, regular Drews.
Hi, everyone. We're so excited for this
welcome,
episode.
Welcome. Welcome to episode 60.
Yes.
It's a special episode for us, Corey. I don't know if it's a special episode for everybody, but it's certainly a special episode for us.
This is extremely special.
Because what are we discussing today, Corey?
We're discussing season 2, episodes 1 and 2, because it's a two-parter of the Hardy Boys Nancy Drew mystery show. This one is titled The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew Meet Dracula.
Oh my God.
And this is the first ever crossover in history, in a book, an on-screen adaptation, period. It's the very first meeting of the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, which what could be more special than that, right?
It is 100% so iconic. The best episode of TV that I may, best two episodes of TV that I may have ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think the origination of the Francie ship.
Oh, yes.
100%.
They knew what they were doing.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
Oh, yes.
And it kicked off just like the arc of history.
Oh, yes.
Just bending towards Francie.
Yes.
And these two episodes of TV in the 1970s. So if you're a Francie shipper, if you are on the good ship Francie, you don't need to walk. You need to run to your computer or your TV. Find these two episodes.
They're all on YouTube.
And watch them. They're all on YouTube for free. Absolutely low bar. You do not have to pay a cent to watch them. What is stopping you? You must go do it right now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because it features Nancy and Frank cuddling.
Yes.
Nancy and Frank, heavy, heavy sexual tension.
Mm-hmm.
Near kissing. It's so much.
Mm-hmm.
I squeed, like literal squeeing, so many times throughout this episode. These two episodes. So many times. It's just, what are you waiting for?
It's also the introduction of Bess to this TV show. She wasn't in the first season, and we meet her in this one, which is also great. Mm-hmm. We love that.
Do the same crap to Bess here, don't we?
Yes,
do the same crap with food. Always, always, Bess has got to be on a diet. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll break my diet, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this girl is the smallest person that I have ever seen. And it's just so frustrating. It's just so freaking frustrating.
So few lines and wasted on, maybe I won't go on my diet on this trip. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
But the rest of it's fantastic.
And the rest of it's great. The rest of it's great.
Fun fact for you all. When you see the title of this show, The Hardy Boys Nancy Drew Mysteries, you'll see four numbers after the title, 1977. And you might think, yeah, duh, Corey, obviously that's the year it was released. But a lot of people might not know this. It actually refers to the number of flashlights that this show deserves. 1,977 flashlights out of 5. That's how good the show is.
Absolutely. I would give it more. I would give it 2 million flashlights.
Exactly.
There is not a single moment that I didn't enjoy watching it.
Right.
Not a single thing, aside from the best thing, that mm-hmm. I think was bad, a poor choice. Nothing. No notes.
No notes. It was so good.
Well, yeah, so
there
three,
was one thing,
words?
But...
Well, oh. What?
the Nazi arm guy.
Oh, right, the Nazi arm. Oh my God,
that was weird. That was really
weird. That was really weird.
Like, completely unnecessary, but I.
Well, also, why are they all German? Can we talk about why they're all German? Why? They're in Romania. Yeah. Why is everybody German?
Couldn't tell ya.
Okay, anyway. So aside from that, okay, a million flashlights. Yes. Not 2 million, a million.
Still more than deserving of all the love that it gets.
100%. So, three words. I think one of the words just has to be Francie. I think has to be Francie.
Of course.
Because that's all I care about. Mm-hmm. So, Francie,
music.
Vlad Dracul.
Yes, yes. Dracula in the title, but obviously a huge part of this.
Mm-hmm. And
bands, music, performances.
Yeah, bands. Mm-hmm. Bands.
We get a lot of songs in this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, also a pretty big celebrity cameo. Actually, two big celebrity cameos in this one. From the 1970s, so a little bit lost on me, but I looked it up, you know? I was like, that person seems important.
Yeah.
Who's that? Who's that guy?
Well, Sean Cassidy's music career was, you know, taken off pretty well around this time, so the producers obviously really wanted to have him showcase that, and they had to bring in some other talent as well to add it into the plot a little bit more seamlessly, I guess. It's pretty shoehorned in, honestly, but that's okay.
Nothing. There's nothing funnier than watching Sean Cassidy sing.
Yes.
The way that this boy, man, I don't know, person, holds his lips when he sings. It's like, there's this puckering, like, Elvis thing. I cannot handle it. This is so funny.
Oh my gosh. Iconic.
Yeah.
Honestly. Absolutely. The whole show.
Icon behavior. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's just go.
Let's get the plot.
I need to talk about it.
Okay.
Okay. We start off episode one with this glorious spooky howl sound effect and shot of a castle that, weirdly enough to me, I don't know if it was just me imagining this, but it looked exactly like the castle from Captive Curse to me.
I could see it. It's kind of like set up high on the hill and dark and spooky. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the massive screenshots that I took and put into our episode.
Oh, did you?
Folder.
Okay.
But I specifically made a point to find a picture of the Captive Curse castle so that I could look at them side by side.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And so it looks a lot like it to me. There's a date that pops up that tells us that this is supposedly June 4th in Transylvania. And we get this scene where the caretaker of this spooky castle is driving none other than Fenton Hardy up to it and warns him that he should not go in here. But he's Fenton Hardy. Like, is he scared?
He's scared
of Dracula's castle?
Right.
No, he's 100% going to go in. But the caretaker is certainly scared, and so he tells him he's going to go wait down at the bottom of the hill for him. He's not going to wait outside for him up here. So Fenton's like, okay, whatever. And he goes in, starts to spook around this pokey castle. Of course, unbeknownst to him.
Spook around the spooky.
What did I say?
Spook around the pokey castle.
Spook around the pokey?
He does kind of spook around.
So good. Spook around the pokey. I need a t-shirt that now says spook around the pokey.
I like it.
God, that's so good. Okay. Yes, so Fenton starts to poke around this spooky castle. But, of course, unbeknownst to him, someone else is in the spooky castle with him. It is some guy, seems like, in, like, these fancy boots and a cape. I continue to call him Sneaky Boots throughout this episode, okay. So I've dubbed this person Sneaky Boots, just for all of you to be aware. Fenton ends up dropping his flashlight down a pit with a complete human skeleton in it, as you do. And then he gets hit over the head by Sneaky Boots and falls down the stairs unconscious. Uh-oh. What an intro!
What an intro. Then we get the great intro music that I... Honestly, it's such a good...
This is a different intro from season one, isn't it?
It is,
did they change it for season two, or did it change earlier? Is it just, is this the new season two?
It is for season two, yeah, because the first season had the actors playing Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys just kind of running across the screen, but now we have this, like, almost a grid system of, not system, right. but a grid of all the book covers, but it's the actors portraying, you know, on the covers of those books, which is, it's cute, yeah.
I will say, though, I do have a critique of this intro, and it is that you can already start to see the erasure of Nancy Drew.
Yes, absolutely.
She is so much less focused on, so much less, what's the word, featured in the intro than the Hardy Boys. It is definitely the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, she's even listed as guest starring as Nancy guest Drew starring. Pamela Sue Martin.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though she's a titular character.
Yep.
So that's fascinating.
It already started. She only got 4 solo episodes in this season, where the previous season they swapped back and forth. And, of course, they do the crossovers, but they're more Hardy Boy-centric.
They totally are. They totally are. Anyway. Okay. So then we jump to Paris a couple weeks later. Frank and Joe are here in Paris, and they are, of course, looking for Fenton because he's now missing. They're at the morgue identifying a John Doe. Of course, he ends up not being Fenton. But this scene, I was like, holy crap. We are not playing around here. Like, yeah, they're very seriously, like, discussing the possibility that their dad could be dead. This could be their dead father that they're about to go identify. It's really sad. Like, poor Frank and Joe. Like, wow. But... wasn't him. So then they go to the hotel room that Fenton never checked out of. They're going to investigate his hotel room. They approach the door and they pause because they hear someone inside. Seems like they're searching through Fenton's things. So they burst in to confront this guy. And it's this dude. And he's wearing the sickest fur-lined leather coat. The most 1970s getup that I have ever seen. So good. And he introduces himself as Inspector Stavlin from the Romanian police. This guy is actually a pretty well-known actor. It's Lorne Green, who's really well-known at the time. He's best known for playing Ben Cartwright in the TV show Bonanza. And so I think this was supposed to be like a big like celebrity cameo thing when he like turns around. It's like a big reveal.
Oh, cool. I can see it now. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. And so he explains to Frank and Joe that Fenton was working on a very important case with Interpol on a series of art thefts in museums around Europe. And apparently Fenton had called him and asked him to join him in Paris to investigate a lead. But when he called him, then the line just goes dead. So, of course, Inspector Stavlin comes up here to try to figure out what happened to Fenton. But he tells the boys, you know what, you should go home. I'm investigating. Interpol is investigating Fenton's disappearance. We'll call you. We'll let you know if we find anything. Okay. I just have to say, immediately, my little red flag went up. I was like, whoop, flag on the plane. This guy's sus. Yeah. So he leaves, and of course the boys are like, we are absolutely not going anywhere, and they search Fenton's room themselves. And of course, because they know all of his tricks, they know what his, you know, where he hides stuff, they find immediately his concealed notebook. And he left some very intriguing notes about, like, these art thefts, including, like, some of, like, his future plans on, like, where he's going to go and, like, dates and stuff. So they decide that what they're going to do is they're going to try to travel incognito and follow these clues that Fenton left behind in his notebook.
So naturally, they join a band. There is... there, across from the hotel that Fenton was staying at, there's like this rock group, I guess, getting out of their van that they're... that we later learned that they're touring Europe and going around doing these concerts and festivals and stuff. So they meet Tim Carstairs, the man with this terrible English accent, and he agrees to let them join the band, like, for a fee.
Yes. They have to pay him.
Yeah. Well, at first he's reluctant because he's like, oh, we're making these commissions off the concerts that we're playing. And if we have to split it between more people, then we get less. And Frank's like, no problem. We'll just make up the difference. I'll pay you to join. And also my brother can be your front man because y'all clearly don't have a lead singer. You need one. And so they agree. And so they're going to ride around Europe with them in their van. And actually their end destination is this music festival at a castle, or it's a Dracula festival that's got a lot of music performances and stuff at this castle in Romania. Super convenient, especially because that was in Fenton's notebook that was one of the last places that he was intending to go. So very cool. They head off on the road. Their first stop is in Munich, though, at a hotel that Fenton had made a note in his journal, like a room number and then just like a last name. Very vague, but we have plans to go clearly meet up with this person in this hotel room. So Frank checks in as, I guess, like room 302 or something like that. He's like, I'm here to check in for room 302 with my rock group.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Because this really confused me. I guess in the time of the 70s, hotel reservations was like a whole different system.
You couldn't do this today. It wouldn't work.
Because they just are able to just go up to the front desk and just register. At multiple places they do this. And they don't. I'm like, did you call ahead? Do you have a room reservation? Like, how do you... Is it, and you can just request specific rooms and just say that you are this person, even though you have no identification. Right. And like, they just like let you?
I don't know how much of this was made up for TV and how much of it actually worked like this back then, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Seems like a little bit of both perhaps, but
anyway,
it's great. So they go up, they get checked in, and there is a porter who brings their bags up to the room. The band actually gets two separate rooms. So Frank and Joe are going to stay in room 302 that Fenton had reserved. And then the other members of the band are going to stay in the other hotel room on a different floor. And then we get this great scene of these two glamorous young women walking up to the front desk and saying,
they are so glamorous.
They are so gorgeous.
The most well-dressed, poised, just they belong here. They belong in this beautiful hotel, international jet setters. Anyway.
Yes. it's Bess and Nancy, of course. And Nancy introduces herself to the desk clerk as the whatever last name it was that Fenton had the journal. I can't remember the exact name, but she's using a fake name here. She checks in as at room 302. So obviously Nancy is the person that Fenton was supposed to meet in this hotel room. Oh, perfect.
Which, okay, hold on a second. I mean, eventually we get the stories to why, of course, but when I first hear that Nancy Drew is checking in under a false name to meet Fenton Hardy in a hotel room, I am like, what is going on? Oh my God. Talk about a daddy kink.
Oh God.
Really? I would go meet Fenton Hardy in a hotel room.
It definitely sounds like something that it's not, for sure, the way that she describes it to the check-in guy. Mm-hmm. But he's like, yeah, of course, here's your room key. Your other, the rest of your party's already in the room. And she was like, what do you mean? I'm supposed to be meeting, like, a gentleman in his
40s. An old man? Yeah, or an older man.
And they're like, no, it's a rock group. And she's like, what? What are you talking about? Something is amiss here. So she goes up to the room. There's a bunch of suitcases already in there, but Frank and Joe are not there. So she gets the bellhop to take the bags back down. And then she and Bess go down for dinner. There's, you know, the great line with Bess, got to be on a diet still. And Nancy gets up and dashes off and she's like, I'm sorry, Nancy, I'll stay on my diet, it's okay. But that's not really why Nancy dashed off. She dashed off because she saw the bellhop again bringing her bags back down. So now we have this funny scene where
it's like this back and forth
where the bellhop, Nancy keeps sending the bellhop to take Frank and Joe's bags out, and then Frank and Joe come back and they're like, why are these random bags in here? Take those away. We're waiting for our father, clearly.
And the bellhop is just happy to comply because they keep paying him.
Yes. And then every time they ask something of him, he does the Nazi arm salute thing, which is really bizarre. That was really weird. And I couldn't decide if it was like he's joking that, oh, you're so harsh, you're like a Nazi. asking me to do all these things, or if he's just, you know, a German guy who is older and still has habits left over from the war. Like, what's going on?
Right. he specifically does it to like his boss, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think he does it to Nancy or
Frank. Oh no, you're right. Joe. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, mm-hmm. he does it to his boss. And yeah, it's very awkward. It's like, is this an Americanization of what they think a German man should be doing from the 1970s? Right. Or
especially an older man who would have been a young man fighting age during World War II. Yeah.
Mm. Right, exactly. And so it's like, what the heck?
So I don't know what that was about. I was going back and forth between the two. Like, is it a joke?
Is it supposed to be a joke? Because I don't think it's a joke.
I don't know.
I mean,
so much of the scene is like supposed to be humorous that it was like, why? That's kind of a weird thing to add in here. I don't know.
And it's like, I'm sure if you talk to any Germans, I don't know. I mean, I know what their perception is today.
Right.
But I can only imagine how much worse it was in 1970s of like people being like, you absolutely cannot be doing a Nazi salute. We will take you to jail. You know, like, so yikes. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway.
So, yes, it's this funny scene of the back and forth with the bags. And I think Nancy and Bess are talking. We get a little bit of their conversation. We learn that Carson actually set up the meeting between Fenton and Nancy. Or maybe that's a little bit later. But we learn that Carson set it up because Carson was helping with a case. And Nancy's was, like, studying in Paris or something with Bess. And then just happened to be in Europe. So Carson was like, hey, can you go meet my colleague
she explains
or whatever.
That later. Yeah.
But then we get this funny scene where both the Hardy Boys and Nancy are kind of just like in a huff now that they've had to like go back and forth with the bag so many times. And so they both get into the elevator intending to like go up to this room and figure out who it is that keeps like sending their bags out of the room, not knowing that it's each other that they're in the elevator with right now. So as soon as the elevator stops on the floor, Nancy dashes out really quickly in front of the Hardy Boys and they're just walking at a normal pace, but she runs ahead of them to get to the room. And Frank like says something to Joe about like her being attractive. And then he's like, oh, I hate to like see her dash away from me so quickly or something like that. What does he say?
I don't know, but I really wish he had said, hate to see him go, love to see him walk away.
Right. So, something to that effect. But Joe is like, I don't think you'll have to wait such a long time to see her again. And Frank's like, why is that? And he's like, well, I just got a glimpse of her room key and I think I figured out who keeps sending our bags down to the lobby.
Oh my God. The sexual tension starts immediately when they are in a scene together. Immediately. Oh,
it's so great. So they all get into the room and Frank like goes to pick up Nancy's suitcase to take it out of the room. And she's like, if you even touch that bag, you're going to be on your back looking at the ceiling. And he gives her this smirk and then just like leans down in front of her and grabs the bag.
I am breathing heavy.
Oh, and he's just like leaning down and looking up at her and he like is almost teasing her. You can see it in his eyes, like, and he like,
what are you gonna do about it?
Staring at her, grabbing the bag, and she just calls his bluff and reaches down, grabs his arm, judo flips him onto his back on the floor.
My God. Could there be a better scene in TV history?
It's fantastic.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Except for the bat scene that comes later.
The scene in the car is pretty good as well. But
yeah, scene in the car is pretty good. Okay, well, we'll get there. I'm getting too excited.
Do you want to take it from here?
Sure. So anyway, this is where the whole story comes out. Nancy explains that she's been taking an extension course at a Parisian university, which, are we supposed to understand that she is attending the Sorbonne?
Yes.
Like a summer class at the Sorbonne?
Yes. She and Bess. Exactly.
Of course. Because they're just the best. Okay. Anyway. And Carson asked Nancy to meet with a client of his who had just purchased a rare painting that ended up being stolen. So she's up here in Paris investigating this art theft ring here and had gotten into contact with Fenton about 10 days ago because she had learned that he was also investigating. So they were going to come together and like compare notes and try to work together to solve this thing. So Frank and Joe show her what they found in Fenton's notebook and she realizes that the dates that are in there correspond with concert dates of this American rock band called Allison Troy, which is just an invention of a rock band for this TV show. But the Allison Troy character is played by a famous musician of the time, Paul Williams.
Okay, yeah. I figured he was famous. Yeah, yeah,
he was famous. I forget what he's known for. Let me look it up really quick. But it's like a lot. He's a composer. Known for writing and co-writing popular songs performed by a number of acts in the 1970s, including Three Dog Nights, an old-fashioned love song, Out in the Country, Helen Reddy's You and Me Against the World. Anyway, a bunch of stuff.
Very cool.
He's also known for writing the score and lyrics for Bugsy Malone and other like movies, including the Oscar-nominated song Rainbow Connection from the Muppet Movie.
No.
Yeah, and writing the lyrics to the number one chart-topping song Evergreen from Barbara Streisand's film Star is Born. So, yeah. And, yeah. So he is a famous, high-profile dude, yeah. And he is in this episode. So it's very cool. So, yeah. So these dates correspond with these concert dates for this band, Allison Troy. And so it seems like Fenton thought that someone from Allison's entourage was involved. But kind of throughout this scene and, you know, a little bit later, there's clearly some professional friction between Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. Nancy is, like, a bit unimpressed by, like, their whole, like, rock band, like, plan. And she just feels like this whole operation that they have going on is just amateur hour. And so she plans on doing her own investigation. You know, they don't need to work together. It's fine. They can just do their own thing, right? So she leaves, and we're back with the Hardy Boys, and we are on our way to Transylvania. And of course, we get there, we get to the hotel, and they run back into the inspector, of course, the inspector that we met originally. And he's at this hotel, like the restaurant in the hotel, having dinner or something with some prominent locals, including the mayor. I don't know who all these old men are, whatever. It's not important.
I think they said that they're the town council. I didn't know at first either, because I think one of them, like, owns the hotel, and one of them, like you said, is the mayor. And at first I thought it was maybe a chamber of commerce, but I think it is just the town council. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, like, a bunch of prominent old dudes who run this place, right? The inspector is just kind of, like, lamenting this Dracula festival that's going on. He thinks it's, like, a bastardization of their traditional celebrations of, like, this saint. And he thinks that it's, like, taking lightly of everything. And he doesn't like that all of these, like, people are coming in and they don't know all of their traditions or whatever. But the rest of the people on the town council are like, dude, this is bringing us a lot of money. The hotel is, like, booked. Like, you need to get over it. Like, this is going to put our town, our small town, back on the map. Like, this is a good thing, right? We also learn through this conversation that the band, Allison Troy, is actually renting out Dracula's Castle for the week to, like, broadcast, like, a series of concerts of theirs to, like, some network, which is ABC.
Right, of course.
And I love that little cameo.
Show. Yeah.
Of course. Yes, it's so good. He also tells us the legend of the real Count Dracula, you know, which is very well known, so I'm not going to talk about it. And then, you know, since we're there and we're the band and we got to go, we go to the concert, right? We get there and all of the attendees to this in this concert in the Dracula's Castle are all dressed up in costume like it's Halloween.
It's June, remember. They could have set this episode in October, but...
Why did they not? Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
What was the hesitation? Was this episode released on Halloween?
Nope.
If it wasn't, that is such a missed opportunity. When I was watching this, I was like, oh, we should have saved this for Halloween.
Yeah.
To make an excellent Halloween episode. But we have bigger things coming up in Halloween.
Oh, yes.
So that's okay.
Stay tuned for that, y'all.
Also, make sure you're solving our monthly puzzles because there's some hints being dropped. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what a missed opportunity. But anyway, it's all clearly very fun Dracula stuff. People are dressed up as monsters. It's very clearly this whole theme situation. So the band meets Paul Williams. I mean, Allison Troy. And Allison, he explains that the castle's in disrepair and everybody needs to be careful. Also, that no one, absolutely no one, is allowed downstairs in the quote-unquote caverns. And we see, like, you know, we pan over to where there's, like, this entryway downstairs and there's an armed policeman standing there, so stopping people from going down there, right? So, of course, this is our opportunity to put Sean Cassidy on the stage. And he has his little solo moment of, like, these upbeat pop rock hits that he sings. So good, you guys. It's so good. So he is up there on stage distracting everybody while Frank sneaks down into the caverns. Of course. I will also say that some of the music in this scene, there's a very popular song by Paul Williams that is played for a pretty long period of time in this, and it's The Hell of It.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, and that's just thematically fits so well, yes. Right? Because it's vampires, hell, monsters, all this stuff. So it's very cute. It's very fun. 10 out of 10. Great scene. So Frank is sneaking down into the caverns. And then, of course, Nancy and Bess arrive. In the most beautiful costumes that I think I have ever seen, they're both wearing, like, these capes. Nancy's got, like, a red cape situation going on, this reddish pink cape. And Bess has the most gorgeous outfit, her blue cape, just against her, like, platinum-y blonde hair, very 1970s chic. I want it.
Chic is the right word, for sure. They're just so glamorous in every single scene in this show.
I love it. That's so great. Much. And of course, they also go down to sneak into the caverns. Bess has an amazing psychic moment here. They're like walking down the stairs and she says, well, I guess it's not really psych, but it's a great line anyway. And she says, this place is so old, you can almost feel death.
Ooh, nice and spooky, Bess.
So Bess truly is like extrasensory percepting here. I can just feel it. So Bess is psychic, even in this TV show, which I just love.
Of course.
Also down in the caverns, for some reason, are the inspector's prominent friends. I don't know, like the mayor and like the hotel owner, whatever, and the caretaker for this castle. I don't know why. It's kind of unclear. They're, like, looking around. I guess maybe they're, like, inspecting the place to see how badly in disrepair it actually is. I don't know.
The camera crew for the concert wanted to, like, film down there, I guess. Maybe, like, B-roll or something. I don't know specifically, but they were just touring it to see if it would be safe for camera crews to come down there, I think.
Gotcha. I think. Right, so they're down there walking around, and they're kind of getting picked off one by one by Sneaky Boots guy. So Frank finds one of these men who have been, like, yoinked from the group in, like, this dungeon-esque kind of room situation. And so he runs over to him to try to, like, you know, help him administer aid or whatever. And he ends up getting locked into this room with him. And he, like, turns his head to the side and he sees two puncture wounds right on the side of his neck. And then at that exact moment, Nancy and Bess, like, arrive in that, you know, outside of that little dungeon area, and they see Frank standing over this guy, and Bess sees the two little puncture marks on the side of this guy's neck, and she screams.
Yes.
And that's the end of the episode. Okay, I'm sorry. Time out. How did Bess see that? Because even when the scene shows it, and, like, they zoom in on the two puncture wounds and then they zoom out all the way to Bess, and as they're zooming out, you can no longer see the puncture wounds.
Right.
But Bess is, like, on the entire other side of this room, like, outside of this locked, you know, metal portcullis door thing, and she can see it.
Well, she sees a guy that's unconscious too, you know, it might just be that as well, but yeah, no, it was a bit of a stretch.
She's psychic. She's maybe psychically picking up on what's gone on.
I think that's it. That has to be it.
Anyway, should we move on to episode two?
Yes. Alrighty, well then, we get just a recap again, and then the intro music again, and then we start off right back in the scene that we were just in. So, Bess runs for help while Nancy picks the lock with a bobby pin. Obviously, it takes her, like, less than a second, rushes into the cell with Frank, and they work together to carry the injured man out. And they talk about this a little bit between themselves, and they're like, you know what, we would definitely be much better if we teamed up at this rather than trying to compete with each other on this mystery. So they agree that they should start working together.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry for the squealing. I'm just so excited.
Yes. But Nancy also brings news of Fenton. She says that she has heard that she saw his alias that she knew that he was using listed in the hotel register. So she started looking around for him using that name and actually found him. Some monks nearby found him just like, I guess, wandering around and injured and kind of delirious about 4 days ago. So they brought him to the monastery, had a doctor come check him out and everything, and he is now just unconscious, staying in this monastery with these monks. So the three of them, Nancy, Frank, and Joe, go to visit Carson, go to visit Fenton at this monastery. Again, he's unconscious, but the monks tell Frank and Joe that he is stable. They just don't know how soon he's going to be able to come to. They do tell us, though, that he regained consciousness one time, said the word caverns, and then passed out again. And we do also learn that he has two puncture marks on his neck, but because of the bandages that the doctors put on him, we can't see the puncture marks on his neck.
Vampire attack!
We also get this heartbreaking scene that made me tear up a little bit, honestly, where Frank, like, instantly goes into action mode. He pulls the monk outside because he can tell that Joe's getting pretty upset. So he goes to talk to him outside. It's just like, hey, you know, do we need to, I'll get him on a plane tomorrow if we need to get him to a fancy doctor in Paris, or, you know, what do we need to do for him, basically? And the monks are like, no, we're doing everything that we can. We just need to not move him. He just needs to rest and all that. But then we flash to Joe, who's still in the room with Fenton, and he gets, like, tearing up a little bit. He's, like, leaning over his father, like, begging him to be okay and telling him that he loves him. It's just, oh, it's so heartbreaking. And
He even, like, he says to his dad, too, he's like, don't worry, Dad, it's going to be okay. Frank and I are here now.
Oh my gosh. It's heartbreaking. But then the boys, they go back to the hotel, they drop Nancy off, and then they decide that they're going to go back to the caverns. They don't find anything really, but Sneaky Boots almost gets them. There is like this like stone door kind of that they, is it Dracula's tomb supposedly behind the door? Yeah. And that's where the like dungeon area was, but it's got this like, crest on the door that says Dracula on the bottom, and it's, you know, all fancy and ancient and everything, and that's where we just keep seeing Sneaky Boots like going in and out and following the Hardy Boys around. So it's very
Scooby-Doo moment. How like in Scooby-Doo episodes where like the gang will pass by like the secret passageway in the wall or something, and then just a hand will just come out and like shwink, like try to like touch them or something, but they pass too quickly. That's exactly like what happened with Frank and Jill. They like walk right by the crest, and like this guy's hand comes out, but he doesn't get them in time, and so he goes back in. It's very wonderful. So the next night they like break into Allison Troy's hotel room for some reason. I don't remember talking about why they were gonna do this. I mean, I know that they suspect that somebody involved in the whole Allison Troy band production is involved. So I guess that's why they're doing it, but it seemed a little random to me, but whatever. So they break into his hotel room, and of course they find immediately, like just under the bed, like not well hidden at all, they find a kit full of stuff that you could use to rob a museum. How convenient. So they decide to take this information to the inspector. They leave the kit there, but they decide to go track down wherever Inspector Stavlin is. And in town, there's, like, an angry mob. Like, a full-on, like, torches and pitchforks. I mean, they don't have torches and pitchforks, but it, like, is an angry mob.
Oh, yeah.
And they're wanting to, like, go burn the castle down. Because they heard about the bite marks on, like, I guess the hotelier or whoever it was that got attacked the other day. So, like, they fully think that, like, Dracula is back and they need to go burn down his castle. So the inspector, of course, is talking to all of them because I guess this mob came to him for some reason, because I guess he's like essentially the police chief of this town. And he's like calming them down, saying like, no, there's no vampire. Everybody go home. Like, I'll handle this. I'll take care of this. These people were attacked, but it's of course not a vampire, you know? And so he defuses the mob, and then Frank and Nancy are still there because they need to talk to him. And so the mayor invites Frank, Nancy, and the inspector to his house to like discuss what they're going to do, talk about all these developments or whatever. And they get to his house, and the mayor serves them the most poisonous looking drinks I have ever seen in my life. It's supposed to just be like cider or something, and it's like hot, and so it's like steaming, but it's clearly like it's clearly like dry ice or something in there because of the smoke blowing out of the tops of these drinks. I'm like, don't drink that. Like, that's not, don't, you don't want that.
That's witch's brew. Don't.
But anyway, so they're sitting in his like study or his office or something, and the inspector Stavlin is telling the mayor that he thinks that he is in danger of being the next victim. That all of these people who've been attacked before are prominent guys. He's coming after the prominent guys of the town. So the mayor needs to be careful and needs to keep himself safe, right? Nancy and Frank then explain about the burglary tools they found in Allison Troy's room. And Nancy thinks that it's too convenient, she explains. She's like, no, no, no. They were too easy to find, almost like somebody planted them there. And the inspector just kind of like brushes her off. You know, he's just like, oh, thank you so much. You found such great evidence. I'll handle it from here. Again, red flag number two. He's constantly trying to get these kids out of the way. And the mayor tells them, yeah, don't worry. Go back to your hotel. Everything is going to be fine. I don't believe in any of these shenanigans. You know, I don't think a vampire is going to come attack me or whatever. He still does lock himself into his study that night, though. Makes a big show of, like, taking them out. And then he goes in, locks the doors, locks all the windows. So maybe he's a little more scared than he's letting on. And so everybody goes back to their, you know, respective homes or, you know, where they're staying, right? And Sneaky Boots is on the prowl in town that night. We get some excellent shots of just the boots on the cobblestone and all of, like, the fog and the night. It is just such great ambiance. Excellent Halloween situation, even though it's not Halloween, it's June. Anyway. Frank is like pacing back and forth in his hotel room. I guess just thinking about all of this stuff pensively or whatever. And Nancy is like asleep, but fitfully. She's like tossing and turning in her bed. Then a spooky wind blows Nancy's patio doors wide open, and a bat flies into her room, scaring her, right? She's like screaming bloody murder, freaking out about this bat, which I'm like, Nancy Drew is freaking out about a bat. This seems a little bit much, but it's still one of the best scenes because she is screaming so loudly. And Frank, of course, from across the hall, hears her, comes running over and kicks down the door to get to her because he's so upset that something could be happening to her. Kicks down the door and like goes in and like picks her up and like lifts her and takes her out of the room. You guys. Oh my God. Oh, the sexual tension.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
At this point, Joe and Bess are there too because Nancy's screaming. So Nancy and Frank are like cuddled in the hallway and he's like comforting her while she's, you know, recovering from being freaked out from this bat.
Oh, Frank, it was so horrible.
And he goes, I know, it's going to be okay. I know. And it's just like, they're literally like, they are so close to each other. She is cuddled in his arms, you guys, in his arms.
Oh, yeah.
And he is like rubbing her back. I mean, oh my God. I can't even talk about it.
It's too much. This scene, I had to go back and watch it a few times.
Yeah. Definitely some rewind action going on. So they're outside in the hallway, Frank's comforting her, while Joe and Bess, like, go into the room to deal with the bat. And Joe, like, throws a lamp at it and somehow hits it and, like, knocks it out of the air.
And
it just leaves the room. And it works, yeah. Way to go, Joe. Mm-hmm.
It was a vampire bat, though, and Nancy, like, it almost bit Nancy, right?
So yeah, I guess, supposedly. It seemed to me like it was just flying in the corner of the room, but she definitely says later that it almost bit me. So,
yeah, these special effects were unbeatable. It's, oh, man, it's great. It's clearly just like a fake bat on a string that they're like flopping up and down to make it look like it's flying. Yeah, it's excellent. It's really spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Peak special effects, yes. So meanwhile, we kind of flash back over to the mayor's house and we see a maid frantically knocking on the door of the mayor's office. And we, you know, get a shot inside and we see that he is slumped over his desk. So then we're back with the gang, Frank and Joe and Bess and Nancy, and they're like, they've gone down to the restaurant to try to like recover and regroup from this vampire bat situation, and the inspector's there, and so they're talking to him about everything that's happened. And then the maid from the, you know, mayor's house or whatever comes running into the restaurant and announces that he has been Dracula's next victim. Ruh-roh. So they run over there, they break down the door to get into his office, and they discover that, yes, he also has bite marks on his neck. But the doors and windows to his office were locked, and he even had, like, this roaring fire going in his fireplace, so nothing could have come down from the chimney, nothing could have come in from the door or the windows. So, unless it was a supernatural creature, how exactly did anybody get in to attack the mayor?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Do you want to take it?
Sure. So, the next day, we see the police arresting Allison Troy. They say that the evidence that they have against him with the burglary kit and everything, they also found floor plans of the Louvre in his possession. so, they say that this is enough evidence to convict him of these attacks on these men and also the art thefts. They claim to have found all this stuff, or the maps they found in the trunk of his car, obviously the other lockpicking evidence that Nancy and Frank found in his hotel room. But Joe tells us that he actually looked in the trunk of the car the night before and those maps were not there. So the only like realistic thing here is that they must have been planted in the trunk of his car. The police inspector is forced to let Allison go, but then we all realize if no one, like, could have gotten into the mayor's office to attack him, then the mayor himself must have been responsible for the attack, so, like, throw the suspicion off of himself. So the inspector and his police go to the hospital to arrest him, and now the town needs a new mayor. And the council all agrees that the inspector should be the one to step up and do it because, obviously, they say, he's like, oh, no, I have no political ambitions. I don't want to be the interim mayor. And they're like, that's exactly why you should do it. He's like, well, then I happily accept. Let's go.
A little too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
A little too easily convinced.
Oh, man. Then Frank and Joe take Nancy and Bess back to their hotel because it's getting pretty late, but they have to stop and say goodnight first before they can drop them off.
Well, because they also think, like, the mystery's solved, everything's wrapped up, they've arrested the bad guy, so they're, like, saying goodbye, right. Like, this is, like, their final goodbye.
And Frank and Nancy are sitting in the front seat, and Bess and Joe are sitting in the back seat. Joe's got his arm around Bess, by the way. And Frank looks at Nancy, and he just goes, well, and Nancy goes,
well.
And Frank goes, well, and Nancy goes, well, and Joe's like, wow, or write a novel about it, why don't you? You're so gregarious up there.
Oh my god.
And Frank says something in retort, and then Joe goes, don't worry, Bess, I know how to say a good night to a girl the proper way, and then leans in and kisses her.
They full on make out.
Yeah.
They are making out in the back of this van. Bess and Joe making out.
Look, I'm you here guys. For it. Oh my gosh.
So so, so unbelievably good.
Oh, it's not the pairing I would initially go with, but it works. I think they work very well together. It's very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nancy and Frank just laugh this off because it's broken the tension between them now.
Oh my God!
Oh. So Nancy and Bess go to bed, but Frank, just something is nagging at him. He doesn't think that this case is really actually solved. So he drags Joe back to the castle in the dead of night, and they go back down into the caverns, and Frank starts investigating this Dracula crest on the wall. Plays with it a little bit, and suddenly a secret door opens up, and Frank and Joe are like, you know, they separate a little bit to investigate these like tunnels and passageways in these caverns, and Joe turns around, Frank's not there, he calls for him, and Frank's like, I'm in here, and Joe runs into the room where he was, and they see this big room with like, you know, a couch in the corner and some tables and chairs, and everything is like super, super ancient looking, and everything's kind of covered with cloths and stuff, all the furniture is. But there's also a bunch of paintings in this room, like a bunch of paintings. And Joe instantly recognizes these as those stolen paintings from the museums. And we see also in the corner is a massive coffin. And Frank is like, all right, well, gotta open that right away. So he opens it, and we see a skeleton inside.
Creepified corpse.
And then a booming voice behind us. You shouldn't have come here. And then they turn around, and it is Sneaky Boots. It's the inspector.
Sneaky Boots himself.
Mm-hmm.
Inspector Stavlin.
He has been posing as Dracula to scare people away from his beloved castle, so that he can pull off these art thefts and hide his art in this hidden room. He's wanting to set up a cushy retirement for himself. And also, you know, he does actually have political ambitions, and he realized that Fenton was on his trail. So he needed to get him out of the way. And that's why he ended up attacking Fenton as well. And then of course, all of this, you know, was a part of this plan. He actually did drug the mayor. That was poison cider. He only drug the mayor's cider because Nancy and Frank were fine. But he poisoned the cider. And then when the inspector was passed out, that's obviously when they busted down the door to get to him. And then he rushes to the mayor first so that Frank and Joe don't see, and kind of like puts himself between them and then puts the mark on his neck at that time. So yeah, it was very, very clever.
Him all along.
So he goes to attack them and they run for the door. But then he pushes a button and the door closes automatically and a tunnel opens up in the floor, like a trap door opens up in the floor. And they almost fall into the hole, but they're like clinging to the wall because the trap door hole is very, very close to where they're standing at the entryway to the door. But then suddenly Nancy, Bess, and Fenton run in with the police.
Fenton!
From, I guess, a door on the other side of the room that was hidden. And this is Inspector Stavlin himself almost falls into the trapdoor.
Yeah,
like, is so startled by them running in that he, like, whirls around in the process of spinning around, like, falls. But they catch him, and then
pull him back out,
Fenton, like, gives the, you know, the big exhibition speech of, I knew it was you the whole time, and blah, blah, blah. And they cart him away. But as, like, you know, Fenton's giving his little speech or whatever, the police come over and, like, a police officer cuffs himself to the inspector to, you know, they're going to lead him away now. And Joe's standing there listening to his father, but there's this mirror on the wall. And he notices in the reflection of the mirror that the police officer is standing there with his arm held out, you know, with the cuff on it. And the other side of the cuff is just floating in midair. The inspector doesn't have a reflection. And no one else seems to notice this but Joe. But then they lead him away. And then, you know, Frank makes a little funny remark about having solved the mystery and the end. But, oh my God.
But he was actually a vampire all along.
He was really actually Dracula.
Oh my God!
What an ending. What a spectacular
ending.
So
good. You guys, I mean, like, I don't even have anything to say. Like, there's just no notes. Just absolutely, just the best thing I've ever seen.
Just a perfect hour and a half of television. Or I guess technically 2 hours, but without commercials. Yes, it's so good.
Like, thank God that this exists. I can only imagine how many times I'm going to watch it again. I think this is going to become like a Halloween hallmark for me.
Oh, I'm gonna
have to watch it every Halloween.
I will say I've seen it probably 3 times now, and it gets better with every rewatch.
Oh my god!
Because you pick up on everything after you know what happens. Like the inspector basically tells you many times exactly what he's going to do and what's going to happen next, and it's like oh my gosh, I can't. Yeah, it's so great.
Every single plot point, considering the inspector, makes 100% sense. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in Fenton's hotel room to cover his tracks.
Right.
He makes the angry mob go away because he doesn't want them to burn down his castle. Mm-hmm. Like, it all lines up. All lines up. Yeah.
It's great. It's great. Mm-hmm. Even like the mayor, you're going to be attacked next. Oh, what makes you think that? I'm telling you, I am going to attack you next, Mr. Mayor.
He
doesn't actually say that, but it's very obvious once you've watched it. It makes it so much better. It's great.
I will say, you said that Frank and Nancy were not drugged in the scene where, you know, he drugs the mayor. And
oh, did I get that wrong?
Passed out an attack. No. I mean, it's not implied that they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that maybe...
They could have been.
Because I don't know about Frank so much, but when we cut to Nancy later, she's fitfully tossing and turning in bed.
Okay.
And then she sees this vampire bat. Her doors were also locked. I guess Joe comes in and knocks the bat out, but she's adamant that she locked her doors. I'm just saying there's a scenario in which she was like confused, hallucinating.
That's a good point. Yeah.
She also like freaked out a lot. It just seemed like she was very startled by something that maybe shouldn't have been that startling. Mm. And then also, like, what was the significance of the bat? Like, I know later we learn that, like, well, the guy didn't have a reflection. He was actually Dracula. He probably can actually turn into a bat, and that's how the bat got in.
Right.
But otherwise, like, what is the significance of the bat? Like, we don't ever really talk about that again. We don't learn how the bat was able to open the door.
They just like it was a gust of wind. I think that they do make some hints earlier on, like some foreshadowing about bats and just like being the theme of Dracula,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. But I'm just saying it would be a convenient if I were making this TV show today, I would make that scene as Nancy is hallucinating. It would be much more like foggy. The bat would be changing shape and nobody else would see the bat.
Right.
And then, you know, and that's what I would do.
I like that.
And later we would learn, oh, Nancy was just drugged. That's why Nancy was acting that way. It was because she's drugged. But then at the end we'd find out that he's really Dracula. And so it's like, well, was she drugged or was there really a bat?
Mm-hmm. Anyway. I like that a lot.
Anyway.
That seems like something that Harriet would have done in the books.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what else you got about it?
So, aside from the confusion about the German, why is everybody speaking German in Romania? Because literally all of the characters, the maid is German, like the mayor is German. I'm like, we're not in a German town. We're in Romania.
Right.
We're in Transylvania, which is a region in Romania.
Right.
So why is everybody German? I mean, Romania is pretty far away from Germany, yeah?
Right.
I mean, unless it's like a weird World War II holdover that I'm unaware of the implications of. I don't know. It's just very odd.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the only, I think, critique that I have, and aside from the best diet comment, of course, that we can't get away from, is that I think the inspector character gets to play the detective too much.
Okay.
In the TV show, especially because he ends up really being the villain. It doesn't seem necessary because he kind of already has another role. I think in the scene where we have they've just like arrested Allison Troy and they're letting him go because Joe is like, no, that evidence was planted. And then they figure out that, oh, well, the mayor must have like attacked himself. I don't like that it's the inspector who makes that comment and not like the Hardy Boys who piece that together or make that theory, right? Even though they're clearly doing it at the same time, it's like the impetus to that is the inspector coming out and saying that. Mm-hmm. I really wish it had been the Hardy Boys instead, because I think that, like, we get a lot of the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew, but I don't think Nancy was in that scene. I don't think she was present when they were arresting him. Maybe I'm misremembering that. I don't know. But one or the other. Because I feel like we get a whole lot of, like, this, you know, they're in the right place at the right time situations, mm-hmm. or, like, they're looking around and investigating, but aside from, like, breaking into somebody's hotel room and looking around, which they do twice throughout the course of these two episodes, there's not a whole lot of planning or theorizing, that kind of detectiving. And I would have really appreciated that to make them seem more of the wunderkinds that they are supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know? So, but aside from that, which is honestly a very small critique.
Yeah.
10 out of 10. 5 Excellent. Out of 5. A billion out of 5.
Yes. I kind of read it as him, like, trying to force a, you know, throwing the suspicion on somebody else. Yeah. And so the Hardy Boys, you know, because they do say that, oh, we noticed that you actually put the marks on the mayor's neck yourself and that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. But if they had noticed that, why didn't they say that before they arrested Allison?
No, because they don't say that until the very end scene, the big exhibition stuff. Yeah.
So they didn't see it. They just theorized that he could have done it.
Puts it together later.
Frank puts it together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Anyway.
No. Otherwise, a billion and one flashlights easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, do you have anything else you want to say?
Nope, that's all I got.
No? Yeah. Okay. Then, yeah, just the flashlight score, which for me is, yeah, a billion out of 5. Mm-hmm. Hands down, I can't even rate it a 5 because that's too low, you guys. These episodes of TV surpass perfection.
Yes.
Surpass it somehow.
It's better than 100%. It's wonderful.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, yeah. That was Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys meet Dracula.
I almost don't want to move on because I love it so much.
I know. I know. I mean, it makes me so sad for all of the Francy scenes that we could have, but we don't. Somebody needs to write us a Francy romance.
Right.
Stat.
Please.
Are there any Francy fan fictions? I'm sure there must be.
Oh, there's got to be thousands, yes.
I need to look that up to fulfill this hole in my heart.
Right. Oh, yeah. Goodness. Oh, I love it
but
so
anyway.
Much. But we do have to move on. And we will. Mm-hmm. Not to the mystery stories, though.
No, we're done with that for right now.
We're going to keep the spooky theme a little bit, though. Do you want to tell them what we're going to cover next?
Yes. So some of y'all will be very excited to hear that we are going to be going back to the games Yay! For a little bit. We are going to be discussing some more Her Interactive PC games. And the first one on our list to get to, thank you very much to our patrons for voting, is going to be number 3, Message in a Haunted Mansion.
Such a classic as well. Love it.
Yes. I'm very excited. I think this is probably one of the first ones that I ever played. I think Treasure and Royal Tower was first, but Message in a Haunted Mansion was not long after.
Okay.
Yes. And so, very iconic. I remember sitting down and playing this game with my sister all the time. Aww. And I was so little at the time that many of the scenes were much too spooky for me. Aww. And I had to pass the mouse. I could not
That's
handle
so
it.
Sweet.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah. So, very excited to relive it.
Me too. It's a great one.
We will see you then, regular Drew.
Yeah. Join us for a Message in the Haunted Mansion.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there, thanks for listening.